from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
And first off, apologies for the late bonus show. I was in Toronto helping a friend move over a long period of time.
That's kind of only half true. You were also eating delicious foods, tasting the culinary treasures of Toronto's Chinese food scene.
It's funny because when you say the culinary delights of Toronto, at first, probably people out there will scoff at you and say, psst. What the fuck are you talking about? But trust me when I say that aside from Vancouver, BC, I cannot imagine one place where you will find more Chinese people making delicious food. Like when I walk into a Chinese restaurant, and I'd go to all the ones where you'd literally have to wait 30 minutes in line. And this is a Chinese restaurant where fucking everybody eats fast and the food comes out fast too.
Mm-hmm.
Huge lineups and not a white person in there. You know that you're going to eat some fucking good food if Whitey doesn't know where this fucking restaurant is. So the culinary trek was payment for the day's work of moving stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was doing. I was prostituting myself for delicious Chinese food.
You know, when people asked me where you were, I was saying he was just reconnecting with his friend in Toronto. That's how I looked at it. I mean, all the other stuff was just humorous window dressing.
Well, humorous window dressing slash still a lot of work.
True enough. Well, you know, the bonus show this week was extra bad because, as you know, it is Thanksgiving, and I imagine a lot of people were like, I'm looking forward to that Good Atheist on my drive to the dinner of doom or awesomeness, depending on people's families.
True, true. But I have to imagine that people are going to want the bonus show now because a significant portion of people listen to it while they work out, and after this Thanksgiving weekend, I bet you have quite a few fucking pounds to lose, fatty.
I realized that I'm getting fatter. I looked at myself in the mirror, and I'm like, holy shit, my head is getting fatter. My face is getting fatter.
You know what you need?
That's really when it hits DEFCON is where you start seeing it in your face.
Oh, man, that is bad. You know what you need? You need a mirror that you can, over time, adjust to elongate it or shorten it, depending on what you want exactly. So every year you feel like you're getting fatter, you tighten up that weird little knob on your mirror, and it just narrows everything out, and you're like, still look good. Actually, there was a third reason why I was in Toronto, and that reason is going to be what the show is all about. I had the privilege of going to the Monk debate of Christopher Hitchens versus Tony Blair that happened on the 26th. The biggest fucking show in town. All right?
Yeah, I didn't realize it was such a big deal until I saw like a news report on it. And it really seemed like they both arrived to Hoopla, like in the city. Everyone was abuzz about what was going to happen. People really thought Hitchens was going to bitch slap him. It was in a crazy, gigantic theater that looked like it was made more for operas.
That's exactly it. It felt like an opera house that I was in, which was itself pretty cool. It's very modern looking.
Where were you sitting?
I was sitting right directly to the left. Now, I got those tickets from a fan of the shows. What I mean by shows is that this guy listens to Good Atheist and Fight Linkers podcasts, and he's a patron of both, all right? So this is a serious fucking fan. He listens to 4 shows a day of us, and he's still not tired, so wow.
And big thanks for hooking that up. Because
that was sweet.
Once I realized, you know, you told me you were gonna do it, and I was just kind of figuring, oh, you know, it's like seeing James Randi, or it's like doing this or doing that. Interesting, noteworthy, I suppose, but nothing mind-blowing. But then I saw the report on it, and I got jealous. I was quite jealous of your sweet Christopher Hitchens experience, especially considering the fact, which we always, I guess, have to bring up, that he's dying.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll get to that. But, yeah, I was quite lucky. Also, the fan who got the tickets, he was pretty lucky, too, because he managed to literally get the last 2 tickets. When he called in, he's like, do you have anything left? And they said, yeah, 2 tickets. And he was on hold for, like, the longest the longest time. I was stupid, thinking I'm just going to go the day of to the site and try to buy it there. Derp.
Yeah, that was stupid.
That was a little bit dumb, but yeah, luckily this fan saved the day. Now, here's a couple things that was quite interesting. Before we went there, you obviously you had to wait in line while everybody was being scanned. And, I mean, it almost felt like TSA level, I'm going to feel your groin up, motherfucker, just to see if you got anything on you kind of scan. They were serious about that shit. So outside, while you're waiting in the cold, because it was pretty cold, there was a protest and some, you know, big-hearted hippies out there basically protesting Tony Blair and his involvement in the Iraq War, which is kind of like, I guess, the side note.
I like how there's still people following him around over that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Everybody's left Bush alone, which is a travesty.
A
guy comes out with a book saying, yeah, waterboarded. Hey.
Not only that, but saying, the low point of my presidency was when Kanye West called me a racist. And you know what? That's, you answered wrong to that question. The answer should have been when 3,000 fucking people died and I didn't do shit. That would have been the correct and honest answer. Not Kanye West going and saying, George Bush doesn't care about black people, which was the only intelligible thing that idiot's ever said. Kanye fucking West. But, yeah, never mind that. There was a protest going on there, and you know, flyers were trying to be handed out. And I have a kind of a hard time with this whole deal. You know me in protesting. You know how I feel about it.
Oh, like you're just contrary in even protesting as you protest.
I don't want to protest a protest. I just find...
You just protest the reasons behind
protesting. No. I enjoy the fact that there are people out there that are going to do what I feel is really the minimum that we all can do, which is to protest something. And that's the minimum. That is saying, je n'aime pas ceci.
No, there's a lot other less. Like, you could just say it. I'd stay at home and say it.
It's a type of protest.
Or you can update your Facebook status about it, or tweet about it, or blog about it, or talk about it on the
internet. Suppose... Oh, are you saying that my effort is lesser than a bunch of... You know what? If it wouldn't have been for half the crowd looking like they were forced to be there by their less attractive friends, I'm thinking of one hot girl in particular, but regardless, there was a bit of a, I don't want to say disingenuousness, but this is always my problem with protests, is that you have the group who doesn't want to listen or have any particular debate about it, but just believes that they're absolutely right in saying, we shouldn't have gone there, let's bring this guy to some war tribunal. And meanwhile, I'm like, that's not the conversation I want to have anymore on Iraq.
It's not a really realistic conversation that we can have.
No.
That's the problem.
And for me, like, yeah, I want to have the big-hearted hippies just go out there and do that, because I think that it's at least, I mean, it's part of the voice surrounding the whole thing. I just hate it when they try to drown everybody else out. You are part of a protest. You protested the morality of the war. And, you know, to some degree, I'm glad that you keep bringing that up. The morality of the war is an important conversation. However, real things are happening. We need to make pragmatic decisions that don't involve kind of weird, you know, morality conversations. This is not... We need fucking solutions. So that was the first part that was kind of funny. So there's a protest. So we get in, we get scanned like crazy, and the event's late by then. I mean, I don't think even the people there running security knew how crazy it was going to get, because it's not really designed for any choke points. It's a fucking opera, right? But they were trying to direct people along very limited security scanning.
It was post 9/11 Tony Blair's in town touching time.
Exactly. So yeah, we get padded, then we go over and we decide there's a bit of time to kill because everybody's just so busy. So take some drinks and just check out who's there. You know, get a lay of the land.
Did they have booze?
They had booze, but you couldn't bring it into the platform where they were talking. I guess people were afraid, you know, somebody's gonna throw their bottles of beer or who knows what. So there's no alcohol pass there, but you know. It's nice to have a drink right before you go, because I had already had several before we went. I was like, I'm not going there sober out of respect for Christopher Hitchens, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't know if he can drink, but I can. So yeah, we're a little bit sassed, but what I wanted to do is I wanted to get an impression of who was here, because we had been to some other, you know, we've been to the Atheist Conference, we've been to, like, you know, Skeptics in the Pub kind of things. It's interesting to know who goes to these types of events. And the first thing that surprised me was just how relatively young the crowd was, finally. It felt like the average was only 40 here. But there were plenty of young people. In fact, there were a couple hot girls that were actually sitting next to us, and you could tell they were the biggest Hitchens fan. You know, and they were clapping every time he was saying something particularly sharp, and there was an aura of sexiness about the whole thing, because, you know, you're just like, wow, you're hot on this guy. It's pretty hot, you know, that's nice.
No, absolutely.
You enjoy seeing that.
There's nothing really better than seeing, like, a hot chick appreciate intelligent conversation.
Exactly, and really kind of laugh at the parts that should be laughed at.
And God knows it will never happen when I'm talking to a woman, so it's extra sexy watching them do it to Christopher Hitchens.
There you go. You can always boast that you have a podcast that talks about these issues. So oh, you yeah. can have a conversation about the issues that you talk.
In dignified fart joke manner.
They don't need to know that, all right? They probably won't listen. And there you go. That's you're halfway there. So a couple things that I noticed as well was the place was sold out, but there were actually some empty seats, which makes me wonder if people ended up not showing up for whatever reason or something.
I'm sure
that.
It's like the kind of thing where a lot of dignitaries get given shit, like VIP people who just on the day of, they're like, fuck it.
It's true. It was closer to the front.
How many weasels got given tickets because of some position near or, you know, appreciation from Tony Blair, who just, you know, may or may not go?
I like how you call them weasels. Maybe they're fine individuals. You know, does he only associate them with the scam?
I'm on a negative Tony Blair tip. So
I'm
just going to ride that wave, and I apologize to anybody who's offended.
Who's going to be offended? Nobody. Nobody should be offended. Tony Blair is a douche. Okay. Now, moving on, I want to talk about the debate itself. Now, they had these little cards you could fill out, which asked you the same question that was being posed, which is religion a force for good in the world, yes or no? They also had this one section is, are you looking to change your mind? And the first... I said no to both. I'll be honest. I said no.
Well, it's kind of a weird second question. Are you looking to change your mind? It's like, I'm willing to have an open mind about things, but this is the problem. We're walking into this debate on an unequal level. We have the facts, and they have lollipop candy dreams.
Right, exactly. Which is why I answered no. I mean, I was going to be honest here. I don't want to pretend that there's much that Tony Blair can say that will change my mind. I know how Tony thinks. He cannot surprise me, okay? He cannot.
And he talks like a shit face.
You know, everybody knows I'm an egotistical man. I will admit who's smarter than me, but Tony Blair is not a smarter man than me, so there's not much he can say that can convince me. I'm like, I'm sorry, Tony. And, you know, the entire debate, which I'll talk about very shortly, did not do much to change my opinion. But, yeah, they still asked those two questions, because before they started the debate, they showed what percentage of people were of the opinion that it wasn't a force for good. And it was overwhelmingly, still the majority, I think it was 57 or in the high 50s, percent of people that were on Hitchens' sides. 20, low 20s were thought that it was a force for good, and the rest were just undecided. Because they wanted to measure at the end, you know, you could fill out the cards and answer who you thought won the debate. And by the end of it, it had switched significantly to the side of Hitchens as well. So it was like 67 and still the same percentage of people that had initially felt that, yes, it was a force for good. So I don't think anybody really budged from their position that were on Tony's side, which doesn't surprise me because why the fuck would they? But onto the debate. I want to talk about a couple things. I don't know if you read any reviews about the debate. I think the best one.
Yeah, I read a big one from I don't remember if it was the Toronto Star or it was some bigwig newspaper wrote a big article about it. Literally the night after, like the day after it happened, or the morning after it happened, and talked about how Hitchens kind of kicked ass.
Well, the thing is,
the people were more on his side, and by the end he had really.
sunken it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think, first of all, I think the best article that summarizes the talk was that it was the one that, I think it was in the Toronto Sun, which had, or I forget which one.
Star.
Toronto Star, yeah. Which said, Hitchens and Blair keep the gloves on. And I thought that was an apt way of describing the debate, because it was never a real fight. All right, it wasn't what you would expect in the debate. Now, first, obviously, Hitchens came in and he's guns a-blazing. You know, he opens up with basically a speech from a cardinal that says that it's better for the whole world to just burn asunder, essentially, than for one soul for them to allow a soul to sin. And he's like, this is exactly the kind of twisted fucking mentality that we're fighting. So it's like a strong, here's a man that had been previously, that Blair would consider to be someone like an important theologian, for instance. And he had quoted him, I think, at other times. So he's using a man that he's quoted before to show, this is a lunatic.
Nice zing. I like that.
So it begins with a zing. But throughout the talk, and this was overwhelmingly the kind of position that Blair took, I can sum it up in 5 seconds. It's basically saying, two things. One is that fundamentalism is not solely the realm of religion, which I agree. But number two, that although religion can be a source for evil, it can also be a source for good, and that's an amazing thing, and it's up to faith-based people to make sure that it is a force for good, because it has been used as a force for evil, and so on and so forth. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? The answer that you have when that's your position is actually the same as Hitchens. Is it a force for good? You've obviously taken half your position, because you've said no. You have said no at least once. Of course, you followed it up by saying,
but.
And this is probably, I guess, an amendment to the second point, which was something he was always bringing up ad nauseum, was that, well, I've seen examples of religion doing good. I've seen it firsthand. It's happening. This was the crux of his argument here.
Well, it is something to kind of remember, you know. I find it very easy as an atheist to sometimes forget about a lot of those religious organizations in third world countries doing real good. And, you know, honestly to me, even the ones that do it with, you know, the stick of religion and a little bit of weaseling in there, I still don't care, because if these people need stuff to survive, then whatever.
But you know what, though? My problem with those kinds of charities is the fact that, let's say, you're a Christian charity in Africa fighting AIDS. Oops. Part of the problem is your dogma that is causing those very cases that you're trying to fight against.
We're going to have to talk about that. You know, the Pope said something about condoms. We're going to have to talk about it on the next show.
Yeah, the next show we'll talk about that. So... And regardless, I think that, yeah, you could say, well, this is religion that is inspiring people to do that. But it's not not religion as a concept that is what that makes individuals good. Sure, they can say, a person can claim, well, I was inspired to do good by my religion. But we recognize the same claim could be made for exactly the opposite, for doing bad, even though you think that what you are doing is good. See, the problem is, it's not so much that it doesn't give you a sense of purpose, is that that's exactly the problem. It gives you a crazy sense of purpose that no one can debate with. That's not based on reason. It's based on emotion. It's based on dogma. And sometimes your dogma can be interpreted in some pretty fucked up ways. You know, I'm sure that people back in the 13th, 14th century thought that they were really good people when they were lighting witches on fire. They were doing it to save them. They're like, well, this is for your own good, Dolly. And you know what? That was from their interpretation of dogma. This was an expression of their faith. So I'm like, no, it's not a force for good in the world, because their concept of good is inherently tied to falsity. And that's my problem. That's the core of the problem, I find. Now, again, but going back here, because I feel I'm taking away from Hitchens for putting in my own opinions. I guess that the one thing that I have to say is that it wasn't enough of a fight, but you could tell the reason why. It was like halfway through, Hitchens started coughing and he was visibly weak. And you know what? This is the thing that struck me from the whole talk, is that I'm like, who the fuck is going to replace Christopher Hitchens? We're in trouble. who's stepping up? Who's like the next big intellectual? Who's the fucking charismatic person to come in and just start bitch slapping bozos like Tony Blair around?
Yeah, but Hitchens has only had his, you know, he's obviously had the mantle of a great atheist for a while, but I mean, he's only become that atheist superstar just, you know, it's been a fairly recent thing, so it's, you know, no one will probably replace him, and that's just going to have to do because that's what's going to happen.
Well, I don't like it. I don't like it. I guess it was the experience itself seems surreal, just to be, because you know I have that bucket list, and on that bucket list, the part that you know you probably aren't going to do, part of it was just being able to have a conversation, a real conversation with Christopher Hitchens, just to see how fucking brilliant he is, to just to let him amaze me with something tranchant that he says. I won't get to do that. That's something I got to cross off the list, and I got to live with that.
Yeah, but you did probably the most realistic second best,
which is to go see him.
Which is to go see him at that massive thing in Toronto, that historic meeting. Just saying.
Yeah, I suppose in at least I can have that, and I can say, well, it's kind of a shitty replacement, but at least on your bucket list, if you're not going to do the things that you put on there, go for the cheap substitute. I think this is what Ryan's trying to tell you. Realistic substitute.
I'm just saying there are a lot of things on your bucket list that you better be prepared. Your bucket list is ridiculous. We've talked about this many times. I've cautioned you about shooting for the outer rim of the galaxy when you should be kind of...
I wouldn't have had a problem. See, the bucket list would have been fine, at least with the Hitchens thing. Was he not dying of fucking cancer? Because I was like, figure, give me a couple years, you know, I'll grow in the atheist scene, and odds are I'm going to fucking run into him. It wasn't the most unrealistic bucket list.
That's true.
So, unfortunately, because of a mutation in his DNA, I have to cross that off, and I contented myself with the Ryan version of my bucket list. I let you drive this one, and that's what I come back from. And I guess, but it does fill me with a kind of like a sense of loss in advance. I feel the loss already. Hmm. Maybe that's something that everybody who's listening to that show, the show right now, can empathize with. You're like, fuck, it is going to be a lot less interesting with him not around. That's how I feel.
Agreed. Now, as far as you were saying, halfway through he started coughing and everything like that, so he eased up on Blair, not just because Blair just had the same weak, lame excuses over and over, or... Well, what would you read it as more? Like, just him getting a little bit tired and taking it easy? Or?
You know, no, he was visibly tired. He was sitting down more often. He was just... There were some questions that he was... I wouldn't say skipping over, but... He was visibly weakened from the whole experience. The frailty of the man became apparent. And this is a tough motherfucker, all right? I mean, before he was starting to get hit by cancer, he looked, despite being perpetually boozed up, like he could still just take a punch to the face. And he's a 60-year-old man.
He does look like the kind of guy who probably still gets into the occasional bar fight because he says something smarmy to the person next to him.
He just looks like he's weathered by experience. And I guess, you know, to some degree, this is the problem with interesting men, is that oftentimes it really does take a while to get interesting. I hope I'm as interesting. I hope I'm half as interesting as Hitchens by the time that I'm 60.
It'd be kind of hard. He was like getting in with communist leaders around your age. He was doing some pretty ridiculous things.
He was doing some ridiculous things, but it's still early on in my career of trying to do something with my life. So, you know, give me a break. Starting off like small, doing a podcast, but we have fans. So I'm taking it one day at a time, man. One day at a time. And you know what? I guess ultimately the speech itself, the debate, which the transcript is available online. I'll put up a link on the site. It's worth reading. But there's nothing in the argument that you haven't heard before. Just it's pleasant being able to hear it and know it's being said for the first time. Maybe that's what I felt. I felt that I was part of a moment rather than being witness to it later. And so if you ever wonder, you know, should I go to these things? Should I go to conferences? Should I listen to these speakers speak? You have to. You have to, because it's only when you experience something like that can you feel like it really is real. When you watch it on YouTube or you read it on the internet and you do so from just your fucking house, you can forget how many people are interested in the same topics as you. Those are the people you need to go out there and you need to interact with, but also importantly, you just need to listen to the fucking words coming out of their mouth. It's a fun experience.
Did you feel less alone in that gigantic opera hall full of atheists?
No, it wasn't that I felt less alone. I felt that we were on to something. Like there really is a wave. I hope so, and I want to be part of that wave. A wave of rationalism, because like I said, I mean, by the end of it, more people had been convinced to hitch inside. People are listening. If you don't think that that means anything, if you think, oh, well, the person's just going to fill out a form and hand it back in. I didn't even fill out mine, and I'm sure that there's lots of people that are just, because I was in a rush to go see my sisters, but I'm sure there's lots of people who didn't either. Still, it's a microcosm. What happens when we have intelligible conversations, and we even have it with individuals like Tony Blair who are trying to be diplomatic to say, no, it's still good, and people were still like, no, you're wrong. It's not. You couldn't even really defend yourself, and we didn't feel like this time it was just some hapless, you know, idiot. Because as much as I don't think Tony Blair is brilliant, he's not a moron.
But he's a fuckface.
He is a fuckface, but he's not a moron. So I kind of liked it from the perspective that, look, we throw our intellectual giants against one another, and the ones that have fairy tales come back looking like fools. And that has an effect. People are listening. So let's be part of that conversation. Hey, you know what I'm saying? Hey, okay. We're gonna call that a show. Sorry again for the lateness, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. It's a little bit a longer informal style, but I just spent 7 hours on a fucking bus, dropped in here, and said, let's record this bitch so I can have peace of mind and have some fucking rest, because that bus was crowded, yo.
Oh, isn't that the worst? The Sunday buses home, which are so full, you didn't get any sleep, did you?
Oh, sleep? You're kidding me, man. No sleep. And plus, this bus has usually Wi-Fi. I was going to do some work on the bus and shit like that. The Wi-Fi didn't work. It's just, yeah, so you're squished because the tallest motherfucker decides to sit next to you. I'm like, we're both tall, buddy. Is that a really good idea? Why don't you sit next to the 90-pound girl? Like, I don't get people sometimes. It's like, do the math, dude. We're going to be uncomfortable for 7.5 hours. That was fun.
Statistically, somebody has to get the 300-pound person sitting next to them. But it does tend to usually be me.
Yeah, you're probably the most unlucky guy when it comes to that. So I guess I won't speak. All right. Well, folks, we'll catch everybody for the show on Tuesday. And the regular schedule still applies to the bonus show. So it was just this week that we had a little slip, but we appreciate your patronage. There's going to be lots of cool changes. The new site's going to come up in a few days. It looks awesome. It's gonna be like really excited. I'm just so fucking happy that this all is happening. And so be sure to check the site in the next few days for all those updates. And a new shirt's coming too. We have a new shirt design that's going to come out, and I'm going to do a bundle. Going to sell both shirts as a bundle deal. So if you guys are looking for a Christmas gift for your secular friends, bam, you're going to have the place of good atheists is where you're going to buy them. All right, and with that, my name is Jacob Vorjak.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.